Thundergrunt.
Hey guys,
Bob.
Hey Bob.
Welcome to Writer's Blockbusters, the show where we treat the final edit of a movie like a script. We're gonna go around the table and introduce ourselves. We're gonna start with Jimmy George.
I am Jimmy George. I am a screenwriter and script consultant. My Twitter handle is at Jimmy R. George.
I am Jamie Nash. I am a robot. That's what it sounds like. My Twitter handle is at Jamie_Nash. I'm a screenwriter.
And I'm at Thundergrunt Bob on Twitter, and I'm awake, and that's what's important.
It's amazing.
Yeah, but we're going to start out by learning who wrote 1917, the movie we're talking about today.
Yeah, who wrote
Jamie.
It?
Jamie.
It was a collaboration.
Why are we all talking so weird?
I don't know. between Sam Mendes, popular... writer of things like
Skyfall,
American Beauty. No, he didn't
I don't know
write
if he
American
wrote it.
Beauty.
He directed. He's a director.
Yeah.
He's more known for his directing.
Revolutionary Road.
Revolutionary Road.
That's he directed that. Yeah.
Yes, I dig that movie.
I love that movie.
Yeah. Really a visual guy. Mm-hmm. Amazing visuals. And
American Beauty was what brought him on the scene.
Right.
Absolutely.
Theater background.
American Beauty is what you think of. And Christy Wilson Carnes is her name. She's a Scottish writer. She has done things like Penny Dreadful. Mm-hmm. I think she was on the Penny Dreadful for a few seasons. She originally got her start with the Blacklist script called Aether. Mm. Was the script. It was a sci-fi script. It kind of was like a sci-fi take on Blowout.
Okay.
It was basically there's sounds have a half-life, and they have this device that can listen.
You mean the John Travolta movie?
Yeah.
Right?
Okay. Yeah. Is there another one? The French
There's,
New Wave something.
Yeah,
or,
you meant
know.
The John Travolta movie.
That's the one I'm talking about.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It basically had this, I don't know why I'm pitching her movie, but the Blacklist script, it was this, I read it years ago.
It's riveting.
She had this.
That sounded sarcastic.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Yeah, exactly. There was this sci-fi device that could, you know, sound kind of as a half-life. So they could put it in a room where there was a murder victim. And hear the murder and try to solve the murder based on that.
Whoa.
And she had that hit the Blacklist. She met lots of cool people, among them Sam Mendes. She was originally
I think it's Mendes, but
is it really? I've always
I have
thought,
no idea.
I don't know why. I've always called him Mendes.
We always make Jamie say the name.
I might be wrong. Maybe it is Mendes.
Well, I think he should spell it with a Z then. That's mine. That's my take.
Names.
So she wrote I think she had something at Spielberg, that Voyeur Hotel. Do you remember that one?
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that was that crazy one. That has a really cool history as well that you can listen to about on another podcast.
She's currently writing the sequel 1918.
Is she really? I didn't know that.
No!
I have no idea.
Come on!
I thought 1941.
But she's writing the Edgar with Edgar Wright.
Oh, really?
Yes.
That's amazing.
Yes.
So she basically is with every cool Brit director in the, you know, she's basically just moving from one to the other and writing a new script.
We're recording this before the Oscars, just so everybody knows.
Yeah, we don't know what's going to happen.
Yeah, so we don't know.
I know what's going to happen, but I'm not going to tell.
Jamie's got the details.
Yeah, Jamie's in the inside.
I don't like to use my power for that. apparently the genesis of this script, and, well, first, want to do box office?
Yeah,
give me the drum roll. Morning Zoo drum roll.
The fart sounds and the dolphin squeal.
Exactly.
Right.
Right now, this one stands at $122 million.
Okay.
Is that global?
That is domestic.
Domestic.
International, $130 million for a grand total of $253 million.
Really? So it's not worldwide just destroying.
I mean,
like I thought
for
it
a
was.
Drama though. I think
yeah,
that's
for
yeah.
an original
good.
Drama.
Yeah.
You know, no IP really behind
that's
it.
True.
And think about this
hey,
too.
It's $250 million. I'm not trying to undersell that. I'm just
no. Yeah. But for a non-American war movie to do that good in America, that's
yeah, no, you're
pretty
right.
good.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
I would think.
It's a bust. No.
it's crap. Let's not even talk about it.
So apparently, Sam gave her a call one day and said, hey, Christy, I got an idea. And then she, oh, really? No, I don't know. I can't do her Scottish
yeah,
accent.
Yeah, don't try the Scottish accent, Jamie.
So it would come out like...
cultural appropriation of Scottish people.
It would come out a little like Shrek. If I did. Get in my belly. No, it's like...
That's not even Shrek. That's Fat Bastard.
That's right. Well, same thing.
That's the same
right?
thing.
Same guy.
It's just funny
same
that you
guy.
Quoted Fat
yeah.
Bastard.
Yeah, but, you know...
We should probably talk about 1917 at some
yeah.
point.
He is Shrek to me. So she got
the
a call.
The fact that we brought Shrek.
Yeah. Shrek will come into yeah. every podcast now. So she got the call from him. He wanted to do a World War One movie.
Mm-hmm.
He kind of had the idea of The Messenger. I think that was in his history, his family history,
yeah.
if I'm remembering this.
Yes.
And basically, he ended the call with, and it's going to be done in one shot.
Yeah. Yep. she was like, what?
Wait, what?
What? So that's yeah. our... That's our backstory.
Yeah,
it's
the backstory.
It.
Yeah. That's everything.
The one shot thing's popular, you know?
Yeah. And apparently,
we can do it better now.
Apparently, when they first sat down at the kitchen table and met, she said they came up with the whole structure for it. And it didn't change after that.
Right.
She said that was the first time she had ever done that. They kind of, you know, hammered out the initial structure.
Yeah.
And then after that, it was a lot of research and things like that sprinkled inside into the
gotcha.
Structure and story.
Gotcha.
I mean, writing for one shot, I mean, there's no time jump, really.
Right.
There's only one time jump in the movie.
And so it's weird that the gimmick is not really in the law. Like, it's not really touted. Like, unless you're on...
You mean advertised?
Yeah. Like, unless yeah. you're into film and you really dig this kind of stuff,
yeah, yeah.
I feel like the marketing doesn't, like, tell
yeah.
you that it's
a gimmick.
Yeah,
it's like not
gimmick.
Like One Cut of the Dead. They should yeah. call it One Cut of...
In fact, if I remember the trailer correctly, when it shows Colin Firth talking to the two... giving the soldiers their assignment... It actually kind of like shows it and then cuts into him.
Oh.
And I was like, that's
the
interesting
they
that they cut
the trailer. As if it
I could
was
be
like...
remembering it wrong, but I remember there being a cut that it gets close up on Colin Firth's face.
Oh, there's a close up.
Yeah.
That's
and I was like, it's funny when you watch the movie that it's
almost
just
like
a smooth
jump
shot.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They
tricked you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
it's not
so
really. I don't think they sold that.
Yeah.
In the
I wonder how
so.
Many people came to the movie and were like, wait. This feels like one shot, and we're completely taken aback.
Yeah, I didn't know it when I first saw the trailer. It took me like, you know, after hearing about it, I'm like, oh, that's interesting.
I didn't either.
Yeah,
that's what I'm saying. Yeah. It's so interesting.
Yeah.
And how would you? I mean, I could see like titles. Experience the life of a soldier in one cut.
I also think.
Unedited.
Right, in a way that's not cheesy.
I also think that, you know, even though this is a very serious movie, it's not like an Avengers movie, but... audiences aren't going to come to a movie if you tout the special effects. And this, while it is a gimmick, it's still part of special effects.
Right.
You know what I mean? They're not impressed by the fact that you can do it in one shot now.
Right.
Like the normal layman audience.
Yeah.
It's like, of course they can. They can do anything. So
yeah.
why would that be very impressive?
Yeah.
It's a style thing.
We've
That's
seen,
it.
I mean, even One
Birdman
Cut of the Dead, Birdman,
yeah.
that toys with this kind of stuff.
Back when I like...
The Haunting of Hill House episode...
Early aughts.
Five or
there
six.
Was that foreign
yeah,
film...
Six.
Early aughts.
Yeah.
There's a foreign film that came out when I was working at a video store called Russian Ark.
Mm-hmm.
And that
yeah,
was
Russian
one shot.
Ark. Yeah, yeah.
But that was different because back then it wasn't a gimmick as much as they did the movie in one shot.
Right. It was a play.
It was literally almost, a play that was filmed in one like a location that they rehearsed. It wasn't like this where there's
stitched
yeah, I know, but it's stitched together.
Right.
Whereas
yeah.
that was like literally they shot the whole thing in
it's
one
actually
shot.
Always been my dream is to do a one shot film because
yeah.
So
I could
impressive.
Shoot it in a weekend.
I've seen 65
day shoot. This was
I've done 40 hour film festival where I've seen a team did that,
right.
And I asked them about it, and they said the great thing was we spent all of our time rehearsing, but once you get it, that there's no post.
Yeah,
it was like you add some music and you just you know color it, and that's it. It was like, but they did a one shot 48 hour for, and it was like 8 minutes long.
Gosh.
And it was going all throughout
no
house.
Budget one shot
one shot
that's
so,
cool
yeah
that's impressive
it was cool.
I'd like to do one day that'd be cool
yeah
so I wanted to bring this up before we get into it have you written gimmick movies
found footage, I think, is a similar style of gimmick.
Yeah,
you know,
it's a genre now, almost though, right?
Yeah, but
it's a gimmick.
You could see where this could
be. You both have written.
That's what I was
going to
talk about with you. Yeah,
because for me, conceptually, the thing that always fascinated me about found footage was because it's a gimmick, you could just apply it to movies that have already been made. Like, you know what I mean? Like, oh, there hasn't been an Exorcism movie. Let's do found footage Exorcism. There hasn't been a Godzilla found footage. And I think this gimmick could be applied the same
Cloverfield's
way.
Cloverfield's Godzilla found footage.
Exactly. Yeah. That's what I mean. Yeah. So I think this movie could be the same thing. Hey, there hasn't been a zombie movie done in one shot. Let's do a zombie movie. There hasn't been a superhero movie done in one shot. And it kind of is the new thing,
the new gimmick
you're bringing to the mix.
And
I'm not sure
probably
that
will see that, though.
There'll be at least one.
Yeah.
I don't know that this is that big of a... Because of the budget of it and the difficulty to make this movie.
Oh, my gosh. I can't even imagine.
If this movie had made $2 billion, I mean, then maybe
everybody would have been trying to chase that gimmick to jump on it. Yeah.
The next Shazam would be one shot.
Shazam would follow 97.
Shazam, one shot.
Well, I guess here's the question is, do you guys think that this movie would work traditionally?
Not in the way it's told. So I read a bunch of...
Traditionally shot. Let me clarify that.
I think it could.
I think it could.
I mean, there's even an argument to be made. It could be better. I'm not sure if it wouldn't be better.
When it comes to this, I know we're talking about cinematography, but when it comes to this, there is kind of a distance sometimes because everything has to be a one shot.
So, yeah.
You know what I mean?
So
for me.
I'm assuming that there would be amazing cinematography. There would be a lot of long takes, but just a little bit different, like just a slight re-edit of this, and I could see it still work.
Would Fury Road be better with one shot? Yeah. That's a question,
Holy
too.
Shit,
I think
so. You know what I mean?
No,
a movie where the protagonist just has to get somewhere.
Yeah.
Well, if we took that and changed it to that style.
I think so.
You really think so?
I think it would be cool. I'd like to see it.
I'd see it, sure. Yeah.
So there's like a million interviews out there.
Sunset be better in one? No.
Deuce Bigelow, one shot.
All of them. You can sit here. So he went through. I patched together. This is not from one source. This is from 10 sources. So it's hard for me to quote where.
So
these
it's more
came
correct
from.
Than it would be, right?
Where they basically talked about why they chose the gimmick, and then basically how it informed all the storytelling decisions because of the gimmick. And so I pieced together...
It's almost like the animation thing we've talked about.
Yes.
Like how it's being made is informing the script.
Informing the script.
Okay,
right.
Yeah.
So the first thing that he talked about was why did they choose the gimmick? And he said that it wasn't about flexing his muscles as a director and flexing. It does sound like bullshit. It's there's got to be an element of ego there somewhere. But he said it was because he wanted the audience to experience the world through the eyes of these two soldiers and to immerse the audience into a wartime setting like this.
And he's
basically said, you know, people in war at any moment could be killed, and so he wanted to capture that feel. And he dismissed the first person shooter comparison, even though I do feels like a first person shooter game a lot, because he was basically saying you're not telling somebody a story, you are active in participant in the story, and those are two separate things. But so he had a reason for the gimmick, and I think that's very telling, because the reason that I was asking you about the gimmick thing is, I read scripts all the time that are gimmicks, and they suck because they didn't need the gimmick. And I feel like this movie does need the gimmick. I think that...
Well, it was constructed with it in place.
It was born out of the gimmick. Like when we were doing WWE...
I almost don't like calling it a gimmick, but
It is a gimmick, though.
It is, but it feels like almost...
Here's my argument why I think it could survive, because I think it still has a gimmick. It'll be a real-time movie, which is also a gimmick.
Like Nick of Time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Remember that movie?
Yeah. Johnny Depp.
Yeah.
Or 24 or whatever.
Yeah. 24,
And that's a gimmick, too. Yeah. Can we do a movie in real time?
Yeah.
And those were shot traditionally.
They flicked through real time. I mean, there are probably a lot of real time movies at this point. I can't think of too many.
We've talked before, Pulp Fiction works because if they told it linearly, it wouldn't be as good of a story.
Right.
You know, Memento works best backwards. It doesn't work. You tell it forward, it's not as good of a movie. So I like that both of you are kind of like, eh, I think this is fine if it wasn't one shot.
I'm not really arguing that it shouldn't be. I just think it could be a good movie.
I think that if the same creators made this movie and they shot it traditionally, it'd still be a solid movie.
Right, right.
Gotcha.
It's a simple movie.
That's, yeah.
And that's great.
But
and that's the only way to
downsize.
I think the simplicity is part of the gimmick,
yeah,
for sure.
Yeah, yeah,
right.
Yeah, like they. So then they. A couple other things they said.
Let me argue one more reason why gimmicks can be bad sometimes. Mm-hmm. Sometimes they call attention to themselves.
Exactly.
So sometimes you're like, wow, how did they get from that shot to this shot? And you're thinking all these weird things.
And that's this movie.
Well, I'm saying, what's a great example of a gimmick calling attention to itself? A popular one.
Well, I think in this movie, there were times when it was transitioning, and I'm like, you know, that looks like where they did the edit. And I'm playing that game.
Distracting.
How did they shoot that? Where did they
do? I sadly started looking for the
works
scenes.
Against his favor. But do you think that's because we make movies?
I think here's the thing is, I don't believe movies are about the first watch. So I think like the next time I watch 1917, I will not be doing that.
I agree.
Yeah.
So it doesn't matter. You know what I mean? Like movies are made for eternity.
Yeah.
They're not made for the first viewing. So
yeah.
While I agree with your point right there, because I was looking for the scenes, I won't next time.
Yeah.
I'll just go.
You'll just be there.
I'll just let it happen. And I've watched Birdman and
stuff.
For me,
I love Children of Men, and there's that one crazy scene that I'm you know, I'm constantly like, how did they do this?
How did they do that?
The
right.
reason
the
I,
artistry.
I guess the worst tweet I saw about 1917, I hate bringing up Twitter, but it was somebody saying, like, just because a movie is impressive doesn't mean it's good.
Mm.
And I read that after I'd seen it, and I was like, yeah, but I think it was good. And it happens to be impressively made.
I think,
like, I kind of disagree with that.
That's,
you know?
That's what I think I'm trying to argue, too, is that's why I think it could be as good without the gimmick.
Without the
I'm
gimmick.
Not saying it's worse because of the gimmick. That's what I want to be clear about.
And, and my side of
like
this.
We're really worried about the people coming down on us for not liking
1917. No. I'm trying to make it instructive for the listeners
who are
wrestling with a gimmick. You got a gimmick.
What do you
why
do?
Do you choose it? That's the that's the question. And I think
Sam Mendes had
a reason. A reason.
Yeah.
It was an informed decision. It wasn't just because this is going to be cool. It was I want the audience to experience it this way in real time, because it is real time until he gets knocked out, and then when he wakes up, it's real time again. So
and
he said every
there's kind of an importance to the fact that it is a war movie and it really did happen.
Yeah.
And, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And to experience realism without a break, that's actually something that could be argued is a little bit important.
Yes.
We've never had that in this genre.
I agree.
So,
that's what makes it special. That's what makes it stand out. That's what, for me, that's what makes this movie worth existing.
Right. And to that point.
So you're saying the gimmick is actually important.
I think the gimmick is the reason the movie belongs in the conversation.
To that point, I mean, the movie is, and we kind of talked about this before, there's a ticking clock in this movie, so we can feel the ticking clock with them, because as the time goes on in the movie and things like
in
that.
In real time. That we're seeing. We're not just feeling it's that. We're seeing the real time.
We can see it. Yeah.
So usually the ticking clocks are days or hours, and there's edits and there's chops and we jump.
Yeah.
I was thinking that while watching it. That doesn't have to keep reminding us almost. Mm-hmm. Like we know.
No.
We know the urgency of him getting there.
Because it's so palpable.
Like, yeah. Like it has it
because
broken.
Of the style.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's created by the gimmick.
Whereas if it was traditional, they might have to throw in more reminders.
Oh, they absolutely would.
Like, you know what time it is. You know what time it is?
Yeah.
You got to get there.
And they're doing that, but that's just sort of they're covering their ass with
and
that.
It was weird. Like, in the beginning of this, I'm like, this is weird because they have to cover amount of ground, and we're going to have to watch them walk from A to B. You know, I was like,
so
is this Lord of the Rings in real time?
In my filmmaker mind, the one thing I was like, you know what's kind of weird is that if it was traditionally made, there'd be so many more like Peter Jackson wide shots to show us, like, remember how he was trying to get to the trees? And I'm sure this is actually in the script. Like, I'd imagine there would be a wide or aerial shot of seeing where he is in relation to the trees. But in the actual movie, the trees are kind of hidden over there.
No.
And he's running
they
towards them. And I'm like,
really intimate.
Well, I was like, is that where he's going? Because we don't know, because you can't cut to a wide.
Yeah, yeah. So he said he wanted it as much as possible to be experienced how
confusing.
Like,
and
you can't
we're
look,
with him.
You can only look left, right, front, back.
Right.
You can't. There's no shot, reverse shot.
No,
like,
we're not above the character.
Yeah,
we can't be above the character and see where everything is.
Early on, I know, and this is less script stuff, but they spent a lot of
it's
time.
It's hard not to talk about cinematography with 1917.
They spent a lot of time behind the two, and it was kind of, you know, it's like, let's walk behind the two people and don't see their faces.
The wrestler shot.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
A lot of that.
So okay, so going back to the gimmick choices, the writing based on the gimmick. So the first after choosing the gimmick, the next thing he talked about was, this is very unusual, and you pitch our show as we treat the movie like the final draft of the script. And so he said, and she said this too, from the start, it was the opposite. The script was the destination. The script was what the final edit was intended to look like.
Oh, okay.
So usually, like, a script is brought to set and they're like, we'll figure out what the movie is when we get there.
Yeah.
But with this movie, they stuck to it religiously. And she was on set every day for 65 days and they had to rewrite, like, emotional beats in the moment to make sure that they maintained the gimmick. So, like, it was constantly being rewritten, but they also tried to stick to it religiously. It's, like, a very interesting case in that way.
So, like, there's no play with it or anything like that.
Right.
Yeah.
Exactly. It was, like, we designed it for the gimmick. Everything that happens on set has to be tweaked so we can maintain the, like, integrity of the gimmick.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So, that's, like, that's another, like, really weird writing thing that we don't really encounter on this show, you know? Like,
chicken and egg.
Yeah.
It's usually the other way around.
They said that from the start. And then, okay, so we talked about, they said everything had to be real time. So every decision, every storytelling decision was based on, like, how long is this going to take?
Mm-hmm.
Like, before they even, like, crafted how they were going to shoot it, they were just having conversations about, like, how long is this going to take? Is it going to take 30 seconds for it to be 30 seconds on the page? Like, you know what I mean?
Right,
they were trying to...
Minute is a minute a page.
Right.
Is
that
happening?
They were trying to track that. They were
navigating. How many pages
that.
Is a script?
So it's interesting. The script's 120 pages. The movie's 109.
Yeah.
So it is a little shorter than the page.
So it doesn't translate like that.
Not exactly.
So you have to imagine that was really difficult. Like, to plan out, like, how long is this gonna take? The next thing is, Jamie and I have both read the script. There's no camera instructions on the page, which is very interesting considering this is a movie based on, like,
it's the camera
yeah.
is God.
So
yeah.
on the opening page, it said this is gonna be one shot,
right?
But they made a separate document that was a 65 page document of camera instructions. It was the script without dialogue, so they had two scripts. They had a story script and they had, like, a schematic script. So it was like they made the decision from the start. The story, we're going to focus on the story, and then the other departments are going to focus on their part of it. I think that's very interesting.
That's real.
Especially going back to
what would that be called? Is there a name for that?
I mean, it's just.
A shooting script.
Production planning. Cause what I find interesting about that is the very first screenplay I ever read was American Beauty, which Sam Mendes directed, and it's the shooting draft, and it's fucking riddled with camera directions. I mean, like, every page probably has, like, 20 camera instructions on it, on the American Beauty. Like, it taught me really bad lessons. So I find it fascinating that the first movie he directed, it was filled with camera instructions, and then now he's all
maybe that was Alan Ball.
Yeah, maybe it was Alan Ball. Yeah, that's true. It's Kevin Spacey floating above the story.
Right. Oh yeah, we can't enjoy that movie anymore.
the next thing he said was they had to figure out. And I think this is really instructive. They had to figure out, since they couldn't shoot 1,600 men in one frame, like a Star Wars movie or like a Saving Private Ryan or things that had the opportunity, they had to figure out, how do we visualize the stakes? And that's where the brother came in. Like, they put a face on it. They're like...
Yeah, that was a late edition.
Yeah, which is interesting.
Second draft edition.
Because you would think that would be, like, day one.
It feels so natural, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think...
That's the heart of the movie.
I think they took a look at it and said, it's a little cold, you know?
Yeah, she called him up. This is her quote. She said, hey, Sam, I'm really enjoying it so far, but I think we need a personal reason for them to be invested. So brother,
it's because while he is saving 1,600 men,
You got to put a face on
the
stakes.
You have no face, right.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's a really instructive thing. You always got to try to find put a personal face on the stakes of the story.
Yeah.
The next thing was they couldn't write anything that might involve a close-up. So, like, they're so used to constantly writing scenes where it's, like, a natural thing as a writer to be like, this is going to be a close-up, like, tear falls down their eye, you know, things like that. And she said they were constantly writing things and then having a discussion, be like, shit, the only way we can shoot that is a close-up. Like, it's not going to work. And having to, like, go back and rework the same moments so that they could be shot wider and, like, maintain the gimmick.
It's weird that they couldn't push in and pull out.
They did sometimes.
They did sometimes.
But it sounds like they were really trying to cover their ass in the writing before they even got there. You know,
I guess he wanted also like almost a framing. It had to stay a certain distance so he could see everything.
Probably.
Like you're playing
GTA
and you want to see the guy walking around. You don't want to see his up close face.
Right. Back to the gaming thing, which I think is
interesting. That's how I imagine.
Yeah. He's like, it's not like a first person shooter, but I mean, it feels like it a lot of times.
This would be a third person shooter, right?
Hmm.
Because you're looking at the character on the screen and you're playing him.
Mm-hmm. That's.
I think. Yeah. It doesn't matter. Yes.
So the next thing, bouncing
like
off
XCOM.
Of that, XCOM.
Yeah, right. Wow.
They both said, they couldn't craft any action that might be jerky. Like, all the action had to be shot where they could follow it along, and they didn't want anything left and right. They were always trying to create action that could be shot forward, which was another hurdle for them. This was the big one, and I think, Jamie, this, like, is the diagnosis of why a lot of people aren't connecting with it. Their number one rule in the first draft, no exposition.
Mm-hmm.
Because exposition slows the story down. So you have to stop to share exposition. So they wrote the entire first draft without ever having a moment of exposition for either Blake or Schofield. And then they went back in the second draft and started slowly revealing. And that's what led to the decision to not reveal that he had a family until the end for the sake of maintaining the gimmick, which I think is really interesting. Like, the exposition, you don't learn the things you learn about him until the end to maintain the gimmick. That's what they said.
Isn't that more character exposition than exposition of the story?
Character backstory. Yeah. That's still exposition.
Yeah.
It's weird though, because I think you could walk and talk it.
I think so too.
And they did. And even the metal stuff. They hinted at little thing. Like,
do you think that's a cop out?
I threw
out,
my
Jamie?
Metal away. Yeah, kind of. I mean, I think it was just a choice not to put that kind of expositional nonsense into their movie.
Yeah.
Less it stops
this,
it.
I almost think this movie would work if you just knew that he had to get there to save everybody and this guy had a brother.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You don't really need much
else. You don't need.
That it would still work.
I found it hard to connect with him because I didn't know anything about him.
Yeah. Yeah. I think to me
it's like Twilight of war movies. Like, you just put yourself in
that
place.
Way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
To me it definitely it leaves you colder sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
You know what? It's just a choice. There are movies like this and there are movies that are the other way. But this movie had a very short act one.
Yep.
And it didn't do the 10 things that needed or 6 things that needed fixing or whatever.
Right.
It didn't set up an arc, really. It didn't have like that deeper, like, you know, whatever that is. I mean, whether it has a theme or not, we'll talk about, or these characters had arc. But it didn't set up like, I'm a sad guy and I need this to happen for this to happen that you see in most movies that spend 10 minutes doing that.
We jumped right into the
objective. The one thing it does with Schofield is the moment that I liked was that he blames him for picking him.
Ah. Yeah.
That was like this arc that happens so fast
because
he dies soon. What's the other guy's name?
Blake.
Blake dies so quick after that, but there is a sense of like, you asshole, why did you make me do this?
Yeah.
And then it's like the rest of the movie is him trying to, you know, honor him, the guy that he was mad at.
There's definitely
so there's like that's the arc.
I wrote down a bunch of beats which we can get to later.
We will get
that
to
the movie tries.
Yeah, there's definitely a thing where he's the reluctant soldier a little bit in the beginning, and by the end he's risking his life.
Absolutely.
People. So there's definitely an arc there. It's just not the same kind of
thing that's what you're saying, the things that need fixing are barely there.
They're barely there.
They're and barely
it's,
there.
How long is the first act's like 15 minutes long.
It's
and,
short.
And it sort of has all the beats. It sets up two characters. It doesn't really set up emotional things that need fixing, really.
Yeah, no.
They get a mission. there is a little bit of debate. Should we do it? Shouldn't we do it? Yeah. Did they back up? Didn't we? Blah, blah, blah. And then they step out into the no man's land, and then we're on. And that's in 16 minutes. But when you do it
only
in 16
Wonder Woman
minutes.
Was there. Okay.
Yeah, exactly. When you do it in 16 minutes, it means you can't, you're missing something.
We've talked about that in the past.
Yeah.
The short act ones.
Short act one usually means you either are deciding not to do something like a big character arc or that kind of thing, or you have to plug it in later, which is always tricky to do.
Mm-hmm. Like, that's basically what they do, but really slowly.
Could I posit something that's not? Yeah. I know you guys are all talk terms, but in this instance, the reason I like some of this in the way it is because, like, you know, we were talking earlier about war stories and like our relatives and stuff. In a sense, there's a lot of this movie where I kind of got the sense that a man was learning who he was as the story went.
Right, right.
Absolutely.
And like in the act of war, I think a lot, like, you know, when people talk about their army buddies, it's not like they had all the time in the world to like get to know the intimacies of them. They're fighting with these guys, and it's the act of being in the trenches that makes them close. It's not who they are as people sometimes. And that kind of, this movie has that feeling like we're thrown into this and we have to be who we are. Apparently we don't really know.
No, and that's by choice.
So it functionally historically might work in that way. You know what I mean?
Probably accurate. Yes.
Yeah. That's what I'm trying to say. Yeah. It's like accurate historically, tonally.
I also think in this movie in particular, maybe the intention is not to give you anything. So you just latch yourself onto the people a little bit.
Like Twilight. Know?
Is that a Twilight work?
To make
the main character is a surrogate that you can enter yourself into.
She had a quote. She actually said that. I quoted her.
She mentioned Twilight?
No, not Twilight. She said.
I don't like Twilight, by the way. I'm just using it as an example.
I've never seen.
She said, where the fuck is it?
I think I might have seen that.
I've got my book report here, guys.
I know. Well, that was the criticism of Twilight, is the main character is a blank that you add yourself into.
I see.
She said that Schofield was designed to be an everyman coda, that he could have been any audience member's relative. That was by design.
Well, I feel smart now because I basically just said that. So yes,
and those are her words.
Yeah. So in that way, I think it really works.
Yeah.
Like
I agree.
That's the intention. They pulled it off.
So here's this is the last talking point about what they said that informed all the writing choices based on maintaining the gimmick.
Okay.
They said they didn't want anybody to sit there and share their emotions and tell their stories amongst other soldiers, because there's no time to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And they wanted to maintain the gimmick. And they said at all costs, they wanted to avoid speeches in the movie. And so they had the challenge in every scene where they said, how can we turn feelings and psychology into filmable behavior? So he used that truck scene as an example. He was like, we really want all the guys in the truck to understand what just happened to him. We really want the audience to know that these guys are connecting with him, and we want to connect with Schofield and like let him emote about what just happened, the loss of his friend, and just like, you know, what he still has left to do. And so that's how they figured out the truck getting stuck. That was born out of, how do we visualize his feelings in that moment? We're gonna get him stuck, and we're gonna have him push with all his might,
and he starts freaking out.
We're gonna give the audience a moment where he can express all of those feelings of what just happened, and we give the audience that same moment that if he was having a speech about losing his friend, it has the same effect. So they said at every scene they were trying to turn speeches and feelings into like filmable behavior, which I think is like a really,
and if we know Jimmy George on this podcast, filmable goals is always something he says. So that's an interesting side character, side like piece to that.
I think that's
right?
Like a big takeaway from this moment. Yeah. How can you turn speeches into just filmable behavior? And this movie
words
excels.
Into actions.
Words into actions. Yeah. So this movie excels at that. So that was the last thing they were.
Also, my favorite moment in this movie might be when the guy hands him the bottle of liquor.
And he's like,
because that's that was like the other soldiers, like you said, understand what he's
and
going
he
through.
Said,
they're like, here, man.
His
take a
only
drink.
Words are, there were two of us.
They don't need any
and
more.
They get it.
Yeah.
I mean, that's incredible.
Yeah,
that's really
no.
good writing.
Yeah, no. It was not less words is always better.
Always better.
Always better.
Always better. So anyway, that was what my takeaways from reading all the interviews with them, that the gimmick informed a lot about the story itself that we saw, which I think is like very instructive. Like if you're going to choose a gimmick, make it matter.
Production and style go into the script.
Yeah.
As we've seen in animation episodes, we've seen in Fallout, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, you know what I mean? Like, a lot of people would think we don't talk about that, but there's a reason to.
I was really drawn to the gimmick because my most famous thing project that I've been involved in was a gimmick.
Right.
And we spent a lot of time. We had our sets of rules. Mm-hmm. Like, Frank Stewart, the main character, has a reason for the camera to be on. Like, it was very deliberate. Everything that happened on the page, we had set rules as like the world of this story that we were going to follow. And everything that they discussed remind me of the process that we put into like making sure we stayed true to that gimmick. So
the found footage gimmick.
The found footage gimmick. Yeah. Yeah.
Awesome. All right. Well, you're good
on
that?
I'm good.
Okay.
Book report part one.
And now Jimmy's going to talk about. No.
No.
For his next book.
Well, I mean, that we kind of covered.
Reading Rainbow, right?
We covered the ticking clock, sort of.
Yeah.
I think we're probably on structure, maybe.
Yeah, the structure.
And the one thing I wanted to bring up with structure for this one is there's a thing in Blake talks about. Blake Snyder, Save the Cat. We talk about Save the Cat a lot, but there's this other thing. I think maybe he brought it up in one of his later books or his blogs. I can't remember if it was the third book or not.
The best one.
The one
that has Jamie in it.
That's right. I think we said that on the last
page 85.
We literally made this joke on the last episode.
I really have to find the page.
I can't believe you don't know the page.
I'll figure it out.
I really can't.
I think it's 85.
Sadly, it's hard. Whenever I open the book, it's hard to find because it's like lost somewhere in the middle. I look for it like every night. He has this thing called the six major beats. So there's this question when you first get started on a concept, what are the ones you start with? And he posits that these six are the ones to start with. So I thought maybe we'd just
we'd
talk about those tonight.
Yeah.
Or today. It's day. It's not night. We're in it. Whatever time you're listening, it's that time.
Bob's house. Day.
So the six major beats are these. Opening image, catalyst, break into two, midpoint, break into three, closing image. They're the ones that Blake says, start with those. Come up with ideas for each of those. So in this movie, the opening image is it's the two guys laying by a tree. It's kind of peaceful.
Yeah, flowery meadow.
Yeah. And I'll just skip to the closing image because it usually bookends.
Mm-hmm.
He walks out in a similar kind of scene and sits by a tree, right?
Mm-hmm.
And he's alone this time, and it's after the war. I'm not even sure. Like, usually those bookend each other, and I guess in this sense they do.
Opens his eyes in the first one from sleeping, and then the ends. He goes to sleep.
And just as a hint, what do you think? What do you think that is saying? Like, do you think it's...
That was my next question.
Yeah.
What is that?
Because it's debatable.
That's a theme question.
It is a theme question. I'm skipping
I'm
ahead
rough
a little bit.
On the theme.
Yeah.
I think it's messy.
Is it like another
honestly,
day in the hood? You know? Is it something like that?
I mean, are we going to jump to the theme?
Same shit, different day.
Well,
do you want to
we'll park that. We'll move the opening.
Because
I think
theme's a different discussion.
But
yeah.
Weird because I want to kind of figure out the opening closing too. So I'll just bring that back up. So
it does feel like a video game though. That opening closing. That's like what a video game character would do.
So the catalyst in this movie, and you can almost see. I mean, when Sam called her up in Scotland, and said, "Let's make this movie." He probably said, well, here's what it's about. They go on a mission to deliver a letter. You instantly say, okay, well, they get the mission. That's the catalyst.
Mm-hmm.
So that would be an easy one to fill right in. You'd be like, okay, they get a mission.
And it's a really good cinematic. It's the trailer. I mean, most of the trailer is the
catalyst.
Colin
Firth.
Yeah.
Giving it up.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So then the break into, based on that same phone call, would be they go on the mission. They step into no man's land. They go on the journey.
Yeah.
They go from the ordinary world to the different, you know, the new world.
Yeah. The one that has been built up to be dangerous and scary. Exactly. You never go here. And all
I
that
think
stuff.
There's an argument to be made. I agree with you about No Man's Land, but I think there's an argument to be made that the end of Act Break into Two is when they get to the abandoned German fort, which is sort of where the actual, like, upside down opposite world, because No Man's Land isn't really opposite.
Right.
You know, and like Act Two is typically the opposite world.
And they're surprised, like they're finally shocked by what they're seeing.
And that happens way more prototypical. It's I didn't write down when it was. Shit. Shame on me. But it's a lot later. But still, it doesn't in between then in between that No Man's Land and them hitting the German base, there's no extra character work.
Right. Right.
That builds It's the before world, things that need fixing.
I kind of felt the same thing you're feeling, like that feels like some other kind of thing, like another shift.
Yeah.
The reason I'd go with the first, but it's all debatable.
It's debatable.
Whatever you feel.
Yeah.
And it's kind of like how I feel about Raiders of the Lost Ark 2.
So Temple of Doom?
No, as well. that would be one.
That way, you're right. That's it's a prequel. Yeah, it's a prequel. So Last Crusade.
Yeah. Is their goal, obstacle, and stakes doesn't really change.
That's right.
That. So I usually base it on the lock-in.
Yeah,
but again, it's debatable. But similarly with Raiders, I'm the opposite. I kind of put it after he joins up with Marion and says, I'm your partner. But the goal, obstacle, stakes really don't change too much. Mm-hmm. I guess they do sort of, because now he has the thing. They've he's looking for the ark. But anyway.
I kind of lean toward Jimmy on this one.
With the German, the abandoned German base.
Yeah, that's how I felt it.
It's the first objective that they tell him. You got to get to this German base. They give him like kind of this little list.
And on the opposite side of that, there's really no fun and games that are happening there. It's just more walking.
Just
and
death
funny
and games destruction.
Fun and games in this movie is a hard, hard one.
Fun and games is the movie you're expecting to see, which is guys on a mission in World War One, blah, blah, blah.
Running and killing, right.
So anyway,
avoiding getting killed,
avoiding death, right?
So in my opinion, then it's like the catalyst and the break into almost come right from the initial idea, right from that phone call. The other stuff gets a little. We got to do a little bit more work for. So what's the midpoint? You have to figure some stuff out to figure the midpoint. I think maybe
the plane crash.
Well, I think it's the death.
The death.
I think the death.
Well, scene. That's what I meant. That scene of
For sure.
Him dying. Blake dying.
Yeah.
So that's a stake raiser. Now he's by himself.
And Bob, you brought up how this the protagonist thing.
It's a protagonist switch.
Oh yeah, yeah. The one thing where I thought this movie really got me is that I really truly thought Blake was the star of the movie, and then this turned into the Schofield movie.
Right.
That switch actually surprised me. I don't. Did you guys not feel that?
No, there was an element of he's sort of this anonymous character, and then he takes on.
He's the one that he's the Rudy of the movie. He had the heart. He had to do it. It was for his brother, And the other guy's kind of like the reluctant hero.
Schofield steps into the spotlight. There, he has to.
He has
he's
to.
Shoved into the spotlight.
But up until that moment, until that German stabs him, it was like
Blake
he's
is
on the
is,
ride.
Blake is driving the story forward.
Yeah.
That's a good point. Yeah.
And so I really felt that when I watched
it. Honestly, from the table discussion they initially had, I could see that coming up. Like, how do we surprise people? What if we got rid of the one guy and then it's the other guy by himself? Or it could have been even before that. Like, we can't have both of these guys.
They probably mentioned executive decision. They were like, remember when Steven Seagal died?
Samuel Jackson, Deep Blue Sea.
Yeah, right.
And then I always think that Psycho is another one. You know,
false
protagonist, I guess.
Yeah. There is an element of false protagonist.
Yeah.
A lot of times you come to these decisions too, like, should this be the all is lost moment or should it be the midpoint?
Right.
And in this one, it's the midpoint.
And I'm sure the discussion was, how late are we going to kill Blake?
That's right.
They always knew he was going to die, but when?
And the midpoint is
to
a much bigger surprise.
Substance, it has to be early.
Yeah.
Well,
agreed.
Right?
Midpoint, it's the goals, like you said, goals reset. That's the perfect way.
And the all is lost is more predictable. Like, the midpoint's a real big surprise that he dies that soon. If he had died at the 75-minute mark of the 100-minute movie, we'd have been like, yeah, we've seen that. You know,
there would be no struggle for Schofield to actually go through. He has to, like, go through a lot of different things to get there.
Yeah.
He has to get the ring back to Mount Doom.
What would you say is the all is lost?
I think when you get shot is the all is lost. I think when you get shot and then then the Dark Night of the Soul would be the whole the woman, the baby, the you know, all that kind of stuff.
The reason I wanted to ask you is because typically, correct me if I'm wrong, Jamie, because I might be, the the All Is Lost and Dark Night of the Soul sometimes have the opposite emotion of the midpoint. So the baby is sort of a whiff of life.
Yeah.
You
yeah,
know? Yeah. Like, yeah. like I felt
is that
like
a the, term, whiff of life?
No, no. it's just a whiff oh, okay. of usually usually Dark Night of the Soul comes with
Save
a whiff,
the Cat 3 by Jamie Nash.
A, comes yeah. comes with a whiff of death. People who hate Save the Cat are, have logged off.
They would log off the whole show. We talk about it constantly.
I thought that scene was like a glimmer of hope mm-hmm. for him and life.
Yeah.
And so I found it interesting that it came in that section of the story and yeah. it really was like an emotional
it
opposite.
It also was a reminder
midpoint.
Of him why he's even
Absolutely.
Trying.
His family. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, I know we're talking about the major beats and now we're going into All Is Lost and Dark Knight, but
yeah,
it's
we,
a good
we,
talk. I always find that those sections are sort of this weird, almost like what the debate does after the catalyst. It's a reaction and how we react. So it's like a rethinking of it. Should I be doing this? Why should I be doing this? And sometimes it's more wallowing in pity, but other times it's more building them back up to get to the part where they can do it.
And that's exactly what that does.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's reinvigorated by the woman and the baby.
I often find that Dark Knight and the debate are similar in that regard. Like one is to go on the first mission and the other's to go on the finale.
That's
you know, so
I love that.
I think there's sort of this weird
also,
introspection.
What I like about that scene too is I don't know if a lot of people would even call this a big deal, but I feel like that's the moment also when he kind of just strips himself down to just himself. He gives the woman everything. And he's like, it's me. There was this like nonverbal, it's visual. Mm-hmm. It's just him and the goal now. There's no help.
And
at
we
all,
learn later that know? He has a wife and daughters.
Yeah.
So that becomes, you understand that that's like a huge reminder
yeah.
of like, he's got something to fight
right,
for.
Right.
And like, so it like I said, like re-energizes him.
I think this movie would be way better on more watches. You know what I mean?
Well, yeah. Now you have all the answers at
yeah,
the end.
Yeah, I know. But
yeah,
I think when you watch
but
it
I
more
am,
than
I'm
once.
I'm on both of your sides with the. I would have enjoyed it more had we been given more emotional connection to him sooner. Mm-hmm. If I knew all about his family.
Hence
and
why
stuff,
the second watch should be better.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Like, but like they were trying to do that in the service of the gimmick, but whatever.
Yeah.
Keep going, Jamie.
Yeah, keep going.
Yeah, yeah. Sometimes the way they get around that, too, is they cast somebody you know really well. Like mm-hmm.
It was surprising that they were unknowns.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Shia LaBeouf would have been.
Right.
You know, as a guy. Or, I don't know, somebody that you just already have a connection with.
Right. You feel
like, oh.
you feel connected to him
I
because
love Tom
you
Hanks.
Know him in other
I hope
movies.
He wins,
yeah.
You know, whatever.
Yeah. Yeah.
This guy was really pointy.
Pointy?
He just didn't look like a star. I don't know who that actor is. He was good, but he didn't
Fantastic.
Look like didn't look like a star to me. And like what you're saying, you know, I almost had a distance from him. Like, who is this guy?
Man, mm-hmm. that everyman aspect.
He has
then.
A very everyman face, which it seems like it's fully intentional.
It was, yeah,
yeah,
deliberate.
Yeah,
yeah. I would have cast Kevin Hart, but I don't know.
Can you imagine how that would be? How interesting that would have been.
It would have been if he had like a British accent and everything too.
Yeah, this would be really weird.
When the deepfake technology comes on, I'm sure somebody will do it. So then the break in is sort of debatable, but it's sort of whatever connective tissue when he kind of sets out on that mission. I'm not sure if it's when he's going through the bodies and then he crawls up on the thing. If that's the break into because it's kind of the third act. Is when the other soldier, he's kind of reached that world, now has to convince them somewhere yeah. in that.
To
area.
Me, it reminded me, and it's weird because it was Thomas Newman's score, and Thomas Newman did the score to Shawshank Redemption.
Yeah.
And to me, it was like Andy Dufresne crawled through a river of shit and came out clean, and like this guy Schofield crawls through a river of bodies. And
yeah.
like comes
yeah.
out.
Yeah,
it's
yeah,
like
yeah.
almost exactly
yeah, yeah.
the same.
Yeah.
And the Thomas Newman score is, you know. Blasting.
Yeah, booming.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you can see then when you have all those beats, it kind of hints at what the whole story is because you know your finale at that point.
Mm-hmm.
You're kind of projecting it. You know how it ends because somebody's sitting by a tree most likely or whatever is their life.
Yeah.
The midpoint, somebody's died. So you kind of have the skeleton that then you can go back in and further refine.
The little pieces.
So that's why those six are the ones.
Yeah, I'm sorry out. I talked about some of the smaller beats in between. I just
oh, no
thought
worries.
It was worth discussing.
Yeah, yeah. No, but those are the six. I just thought then we could skip over a couple.
Yeah, and we can go back to the opening and closing when we get to theme.
Yeah, yeah. We're
let's do it. That's fine. Check. Yeah, don't yeah. be sorry.
I'm sorry.
Screw this is a weird movie up. To talk about this.
Yeah, it's dark.
It's very weird.
Yeah.
So, why don't we talk about it now? The Schofield arc.
I don't know.
I say yes. I think he's a different man at the end. And
that's
the beginning.
Test,
that's
Jamie.
Always my test. Yeah. If we put that character in the opening, would he act differently when he got like the message and stuff like
yes.
that?
Yes.
Yeah.
I think so.
What do you think it is, Bob?
Well, I mean, there's like
I'm asking.
There's pragmatic reasons and there's mm-hmm. also emotional reasons, right? Like obviously he would act different because he's been through. I think this is the first time we're seeing this soldier go through true hell. Like he's been in war, but he hasn't seen this kind of hell.
This much so personal hell.
Right. So there is like he's been through the PTSD of this movie.
I mean that town you know? Burning is like a descent into hell, man.
Right. Like so you cannot, even though it might not be like an emotional thing, you can't be the same person after you go through this. It's like the yeah. Revenant or something. You know what I mean? Like
yeah.
once you go through something like that, you are changed. There's no argument.
Right.
You know what I mean? But he also, there's an emotional aspect with, I think he was close to Blake. And while it's not very heavy, as everything we just said, it's not very set up. Everything we watched from that moment on is him saying, from my last dying breath, I will do this because of my honor for this guy, which is something that he did not seem to have before Blake died. Mm-hmm. He seemed kind of like a cold dude.
Right.
And,
yeah.
and then he becomes warm with loss.
Right.
So he's different.
He's
changed.
I think he's yeah. different too. I went yeah. in. I always look for the confessional scene, and there really isn't one.
Yeah, there
the
really
closest
isn't.
Thing we get is where he says they're talking about the medal, and Blake says you should have taken it home to your family. You should have given it to them. And he says, "I hated going home. I hated it. When I knew I couldn't ever stay, and when I knew I had to leave them, and they might never see me again." So, I think. It's a cynical to hope arc is what I would say. There's a learns to that you can make a difference arc that I've seen a lot.
Yeah,
and if
yeah.
this feels like he's a guy who when we met him, he doesn't feel like he can make a difference. Like this is a hopeless mission. Like they're going to die. And he doesn't feel like he can make
he
a
almost
difference.
Cynical just about war. The just, war is hopeless.
Yeah,
so it doesn't
exactly.
matter. Right.
And he even says like the medal doesn't make you special. Nobody cares. It doesn't matter. It doesn't
right.
mean anything.
And in the end, he learns that it does mean something. Yeah.
And he also learns that, he means something to his family the way that Blake meant something to his brother.
And to him.
Like, yeah. And to him, right.
Yeah, yeah.
His brother. I think that's the lesson he learns is that he can make a difference, like, in the battle and at home. It's really simple. It's
yeah.
simple
Bro,
and
it's so
light.
Simple.
There's not much evidence
yeah,
of it.
Yeah, it's simple, but it is there.
Also because it's sort of real time. I mean, I know he's knocked out for some minutes, but yeah. to him it's real time.
That's the only cut in the movie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, you can't learn that many lessons and go through encounters in real time.
Right.
Like in a movie that spans a year or 10 years or 2 months or 1 week, you can learn more lessons.
They did what they could. With the character's real-time experience.
Like, this might be the lesson, but maybe we can't totally see the effects of it until
right.
the next movie,
After.
1980.
It's very much like, it's like John McClane. Like, we hope that he's got 1980.
Yeah,
1980. It's like John McClane. We hope, I opened the door for Jamie
uh-oh,
to do the
uh-oh.
Inside
please.
Joke.
Oh, my God. Yeah.
No, but we hope that
you know,
John's
if he hadn't done
be...
this, they would have won the war sooner. Yeah.
If he just stayed out of it, it would be fine.
The war would have
been... Yeah.
They would have attacked,
Listen
won the war.
Listen to our Die Hard episode
saved
and
millions.
My idiocy in bringing up a fan theory.
No, but I think that we feel like the arc, the actions that prove the arc will happen after the movie ends. Like he's going to go home to his family.
Right.
Come back to me. He is going to come back to them. And he's not going to be the closed off cold dude that he was.
I don't want to see that.
No, I don't.
I think there is an arc.
Yeah.
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 I don't see how. Would you argue there wasn't? Is that what you're?
I was arguing originally that there wasn't, and then I took a deeper look.
Yeah, I mean,
no, I just think there's.
It's light. I'm not disagreeing.
It's light.
No, I certainly wouldn't. I think,
but it's the movie. It's as simple and non like messy as the movie itself.
Yeah, it's
like he is changed by the very thing we're seeing. It mm-hmm. can't not be changed. So it doesn't matter.
I guess my point is, and I don't. I'm kind of agnostic on this debate. There are people that would say you don't need that arc bullshit. You know, do whatever you want,
Marty McFly, right?
Yeah, and then there's other people, but most movies you find there is some hint of it, and I think this movie included, where they might point to this. 1917 needed an arc. You just went through a mission, but you feel he's different if you put him in the this movie and you put him in the beginning, he would be different.
Right.
No, he might be more cynical. I don't know. He might even be more scared.
He's still, cynical
that's still
by
changing.
The end. Interesting.
It's changing.
That's
there's something.
So maybe,
something
maybe
that
I'm wrong.
Changes.
Maybe he's not hopeful at all. And maybe he's
maybe.
The opposite.
I don't
maybe
know.
He's super damaged.
That's part of it. Like, I could see him being like, I'm not going through that again. Hell with that. We're going to die out there.
He becomes
you
a
know?
Deserter or something. Yeah.
You go out.
Still, that's arguably an arc, right?
It yeah. is.
It
is.
Just gets worse.
Yeah. It is.
Yeah.
But
I think that's all an arc has to be. So I think that's the argument I'd use against those. You don't need one of those stupid arcs. I think, well, maybe, I think you do, because if the story is so slight that it doesn't change them at all,
right.
then the story might not be that good.
If there's
mean,
not
even Marty McFly probably changes at the end
growth
of all
and
that.
Change.
Yeah, right, right.
I got you. If there's not enough transformational moments,
yeah, then what,
is
why
the
are
story
we telling,
pushing them?
I feel like I'm,
but
I'm
like,
feel like I'm McGee in adaptation. Why the fuck are you telling the story?
But yeah, I was gonna say like,
get the hell out of here.
Someone goes blind.
I don't want to be a jerk about all the terms and everything, but in a war movie, especially, everything this guy goes through is a life changing event. Yeah.
No, I think you're right.
From scene to scene.
And like, so what if it's not on the page and he goes, wow, now I see the importance of humanity. You know, I don't need that. But dude, the guy had to kill all these people and like, and his life was like almost over for a sustained 90 minutes.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
That's
like,
changed.
That's
no matter what, I don't need to see or
that's
hear
my
it.
Argument.
They, yeah, it's
yeah.
changed.
But they do plop in, like there's, when we meet him, he doesn't get any mail and the script says he doesn't seem to care.
Yeah,
like
yeah.
it describes him as not
he's cold.
Caring.
Yeah.
And then like Blake is really upset because he thought he was going home and he can't go home now, it's delayed. And Schofield's like, it's better not to go home. And then like, there's all these little moments that it plants about not feeling like he has an emotional connection to his family. And then by the end, I mean, he's looking at the picture and it says, come back to me. How much more literal can you get?
I think you could almost even argue that if he had an arc, and you could argue that his arc actually ends as he's holding his friend and he's dying.
Interesting.
Like he's the
like
same guy from that
from
moment
that
to the
moment.
End. Because at that moment he makes a decision of who he is as
that's,
a person.
That's,
you know?
That's a good point.
There, yeah. there is, in that's a moral premise. The book, The Moral Premise, has this thing called.
I've read that book. I've read that one. I know that one.
Yeah. It has this thing called the moment of grace. And the moment of grace is when they have this kind of moment that from that point forth, they're trying things a different way. And I think that's a very good moment of grace.
In the middle, when he's holding.
Right in the middle. And it's usually around the midpoint. It's usually not necessarily the midpoint, but it's usually a few pages before, a few pages after, or the midpoint.
And he literally takes his, what Blake has that's medals. He takes his rings. He takes the thing around his neck. It's as close as Blake has to a medal. And he's got to deliver the medals to his brother.
It's a teaching moment. I didn't know the British soldiers didn't have dog tags.
Yeah, me neither.
I didn't know that. I was like, why didn't he take his dog tag?
He identification, but it wasn't the same as what we're accustomed to.
We're accustomed to the dog tag.
Yeah,
that was the point of dog tags.
Yeah,
you do that. But he didn't have that. I didn't know that.
So,
yeah.
The moment of grace.
He's almost like a...
That's a good one, Jamie. Mm-hmm. It's a good thing to bring up in
this
movie. This
is a weird movie to bring up for this, but it almost gives you, like, if we saw Inigo Montoya from the inception of his... from Princess Bride, like, you know what I mean? Like, he has a goal for his life now, and when... We see the end. This guy get to the end. He probably had a moment of, well, now what?
Mm-hmm.
I did the thing. My life's goal was that mission.
Get
and
back
now,
to my family.
What do I do now? I don't know. I've been through hell, and I just I'm lost almost. You just get to my family.
They bring a scroll. He died the next day.
Yeah, right.
Accidentally shot by his own troops.
I was waiting for that tree to blow up or something.
Oh my God. Jeez.
It's like, is he gonna get shot right here? Like, I mean, terrible. Oh man, it's a different movie.
The next day, he helped Wonder Woman escape. No.
What a cameo that would have been.
She just showed up at the end.
Total shift.
Right, total shift. Fine. That's okay.
Related to that, why don't we, theme-wise, I
mean. Antagonist, right?
Oh, yeah. I just wanted to bring up the fact that there is no, they don't even, I think it's very interesting that
the stab
they,
guy doesn't
that
count.
They don't, I mean, even his face is on screen for like 30 seconds. It's very frantic.
And it's in like a wide, so you can't even see it. Yeah.
I think it's very, it says a lot about the movie that they never really give a human face to the Germans.
Yeah.
I think it's almost feels like the villains are the superiors on their side. who are like warmongering. Yeah. Like, is Benedict Cumberbatch the villain of this movie?
I was gonna just say what you just. I was gonna say that he feels like he shot and acted like a villain.
Like his plan is equally as impactful to all the suffering as the German's trap. There's even a praise of the killer speech about him. There is.
Yeah.
You're right. There's a praise of the killer speech.
Yeah. He's a hard ass that will not budge.
And he thinks he knows what's happening and he
doesn't. Take a witness. Some people like the fight.
You're so right.
That is absolutely there's two praise of the killer speeches for him then.
Mark Strong one.
Colin Firth says he thinks he knows what he's doing. And
they're both delivered by name actors.
There's two praise of the killer speeches for him. So that's a good point. I was just thinking that the villain's plan is almost Colonel McKenzie rather than the Germans.
Yeah,
that's the
Germans
plan
are almost
trying...
a force of nature.
Yeah, like the plan that the villain's plan
it's
that
like
we're trying.
It's like Twister. It's the tornado.
Like we're rooting for him to prevent his own guy.
Yeah.
From
Nazi NATO.
Yeah. Nazi. How has that not been made by Asylum or something?
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I just thought it was very interesting. It's not what I expected from a war movie. For the Germans, and I know we haven't hit the Nazi era yet, but for the Germans to not be given like a leader with a face is very unconventional and not what I was expecting from this movie at all. And like it almost like said like the guys on their side who want the fight, like some men just want to fight, are the bad guys.
You're like, expecting like a Save It Private Ryan where they let the German go and then he comes back. Like that kind of a... arc somewhere.
And I think
there.
That's telling about what this movie's trying to say about war. Yeah, and I don't know what
baseless.
That is, but yeah.
Although that praise of the killer speech that Mark Strong gives was pitch perfect fucking writing.
Mm-hmm.
When he said take a witness, I was like, that's everything I need to know about this guy.
Yeah.
You know, because he knows he's like, this guy is he's bloodthirsty.
Yeah.
He wants the war. That's fucking great. That was an excellent moment.
It was.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now we can go into the
Now
theme.
We can. Yeah.
What is it, Jamie?
I don't know, because he's got a...
I don't know. All right, see you guys later.
Thanks for listening.
Usually I tie it to the arc, and you know, there are some. Here's where I was trying to clue into it, just to see if there was a bigger picture story. And again, this is kind of where the opening image, closing image, I was trying to figure out. Mm-hmm. Like that's a key part of the theme. Usually, another place they had this song they kept coming up, they kept singing. You know,
write down the lyrics.
It was something about. You travel faster as one, I think, or something. I mean, that was the gist of it.
Oh, it's about unity.
When you go, like when you go through hell, you travel faster as one, or something like that. I wish I should.
Shame on us for not.
And it was Mark Strong said that, didn't he?
It comes up during the truck scene, wasn't it?
No, at the very beginning, that's the justification for why we're only sending two of you. But is that in the song as well?
You're right, it's echoed in the song.
It is.
Interesting. I didn't catch that.
But I don't know what. I don't know if this movie
that
told
seems
me.
Like a bleak theme it's... though. Travel alone and you'll win. Like
maybe he's proving somehow the opposite. You know, like
he was never alone during the during his strife. I guess
I'm traveling with the baggage of the guy. I'm saving people.
Messy.
I don't know. I'm not sure.
Yeah. So I read.
Sure,
article.
It's not just like don't give up.
I think
well,
so. I think
or something.
So like digging into. I was looking because I wasn't sure. It's not easy.
Yeah. Usually those songs are clues. They're kind of like the when you put something
that.
On the board, you know? It's,
I was wrestling
it's like
with
Lord
the,
of the
with
Rings
the,
or something.
With the metal speeches seemed important, but I think so the subject of hope comes up in all the big moments. So in Colin Firth's scene, he says hope twice when they're like the Germans have abandoned that base, we don't have to worry about it anymore. He's like, don't get your hopes up. But then in the end of that speech, he tells them that they are their only hope.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a debate about hope. And then at the truck scene, which is like right after the MiG point, as he's leaving by himself, the one soldier says to him, I hope that you get there. Mm-hmm. And then in the Colonel McKenzie scene, he says, I hope today would be a good day. Hope is a dangerous thing. And I don't know what it's saying about hope. And I feel like that moment could be at the end where he closes his eyes and after looking at his family that he hopes he's going to. I don't know.
So there was something you guys said, but I didn't quite that landed with me. But the other place that I kept coming back to was the metal thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You know, the nobody cares about these medals. They're stupid. But in the end, he showed what earning a medal really was or something.
Honor.
There's some kind
of thing. Was there a line where he will probably get a medal? Didn't somebody say something
about
that?
Oh, he said that to Blake for saving his life. You got your medal sorted. And he's you think?
Right.
Like, that's, he's really excited about it. And then he gets killed. But that's what leads him to be like, what about your medal? What happened to it? And he's like, I sold it because I don't give a shit because it doesn't matter. And then by the end, he does learn that it matters. But there's not really any discussion to hammer
like
it home.
It turned a guy that didn't care into a guy that did.
Yeah.
That's what it does.
No,
seemed,
but
like,
so
know.
I read this article by like one of my favorite screenwriting teachers, Paul Joseph Gallino. He wrote Screenwriting and Sequence Method, which we've talked about.
Yeah.
And he's a teacher. He was a teacher at USC, and I think he teaches at Chapman now. Anyway, he wrote an article bashing this
movie. You wrote Cop and a Half.
Cop and a Half. That would be awesome.
There's a sequel.
No, but he was arguing that this is not a good movie because it's thematically empty and that what you there it has nothing to say. There's an article of scriptmag.com on check it out.
That's why
I wanted to bring it up because
To me it has some meaning, but it's
I
hard.
That seems like
saying
a, it honestly seems like so, no offense to that guy, but it seems like a dick thing to say about a war movie.
Well, it's like
you know what I mean. Like it obviously has something to say, but
it made me go like, well, what does it have to
so,
say?
So yeah, no, I'm not agreeing.
Just me sitting back thinking about it, and this is me just on the fly, but I think here's what's interesting about the story. Nobody's even going to know this guy's a hero at the end of the day.
Yep.
Think about that.
No one saw
No one will ever know the journey he went through.
We know Benedict Cumberbatch's character is going to not
he'll
care.
He'll probably take the credit somehow or be pissed or whatever. So literally,
My men got some intel.
This guy was just some lame messenger.
It's Rogue One.
People do remember the
medals. That's what it is.
People remember,
I hate that movie.
People remember the stupid medals, but those things maybe are good, maybe they're not, maybe they're... But this guy is going to do something he never earned a medal for, and it's a lot more important than the thing he did earn the medal for.
Yeah.
So I don't know. Maybe it's just something like the individual accomplishments will never be told, but we should appreciate them or something. I don't know.
I don't
they
know.
Say a lot.
There's
some
something
kind
about
of thing.
Him getting to write to his mother that he says, "I'll get to write to your mother and tell him about you weren't alone." And he's going to write to Blake's mother, and he's going to reunite with his families. I don't know.
Like, so there are stories that are never going to get medals that were heroes.
If I'm wrong, we've talked before about how I think Jamie, you said it. Like sometimes great movies are written even without themes.
Yeah,
like
clear themes.
Like clear themes.
There's
like,
subject matter here going on.
I remember
on.
Jamie saying like sometimes you're just finding the theme as you're writing.
As you're writing,
and you might not even find it.
Of course,
ever.
Yeah.
It's just,
that's the best way to do it.
But
what keeps popping up?
It's weird to me to say something's bad when it is a story that has touched people, and that does have a purpose.
You're not saying it's bad, but you're saying it's weird to hear someone say that?
Right, yes. like, the theme isn't exactly clear, but we are watching a character go through something that's truly incredible and impressive and insane and horrible.
There are writers that write with clear intent to tell a theme.
Yeah, right.
And there are other ones that just comes from their self-conscious and it feeds into it.
Right.
I think you can feel when a movie doesn't have a theme, when it's just like...
This one doesn't feel empty.
This one does not feel
empty. Let me ask you this, Jamie. Here's a good
feel
exercise.
Empty to me.
We're figuring this out on the fly.
Yeah, we are.
The moment of grace.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
What is that moment of grace and what does that say?
Well, in this movie,
I'm saying.
I do think it's when he dies.
And what is
Blake
that?
Dies.
What is he?
And what
moment of grace is he having there?
So what is he learning? What is he learning to do differently? I think he is. This is tricky because we don't get a lot of depth of his character,
right?
But I think he kind of goes from the guy that reluctantly was on the mission to a guy that's gonna.
He's accepting the mission full
accepting
force.
The mission,
in
his
all
soul,
on him.
In his soul,
in his
more
soul,
than just the orders.
Right. And that's because he feels a responsibility. So what does this say? He has a responsibility to honor Blake
to make his death matter.
It's way less about the 1600 men and way more just about getting his identification and his rings and his picture and all his stuff to his brother. So what is that? That's the question. Mm-hmm. That's basically what he's like. His moment of grace is all about that.
Also, it, at the expense of his own life at all costs.
Yeah.
Right. He's
right.
willing like, to sacrifice himself.
Sacrifice he would sac- for he would sa- Blake.
Say, there's no point, I doubt, after that moment that he would die happily to deliver the message and he would just give himself up.
So
that's different than when we meet him, right?
Absolutely.
I feel that's a change and that's a theme of some sort, right?
Yeah. I was going to bring this up, but I forgot about it. But in that book,
you're right.
Can my screenplay beat up your screenplay? He posits.
It's a great title.
Yeah. The author, Jeffrey Schechter, I think is his name.
It's a great book.
Yeah. He posits this idea. And I like to keep this in the back of my mind when I'm writing arcs, just to help me kind of look at it. And he says, Act 1, they're an orphan. Act 2, they're a wanderer. Act 3, they're a warrior. And Act 4, in the finale, they're a martyr.
This might skip wanderer, but...
Yeah, what's that?
I might skip Wanderer a little
bit. Well, Wanderer just means they're like, they go on a mission and they don't really, they're kind
they're
of
not
the same.
They're not invested in it.
It's okay, then yeah.
Yeah, they're not invested. And then when the midpoint happens, so when Blake dies, he becomes a warrior. And then in the third act, he becomes a martyr. And it kind of tracks with this guy.
Yeah, it does track with that.
Now, I don't know what that internally, I can't wrap my theme around it. Like, because I don't know exactly why or what it's saying when he turns from the one to the other to the other. But I feel it, and I think it makes sense.
It
logically makes sense.
That's why I guess what I was trying to say earlier is like, you can't tell me that audiences haven't felt a theme.
Yeah.
Now, but the fact that we can't put it into very convenient words.
Yeah, the only words that I've found, but I don't know if this is a theme, this is more the arc I kept going back to, is, like I said, he seems like a guy who doesn't, he's the guy who's saying metal's not special. Nobody cares. And that, what's that saying? Like, you don't matter. What we do doesn't matter. And then by the end, and that's at the midpoint, it's like, oh shit, every single moment. Yeah.
What we do matters.
Yeah,
is that a theme?
Yeah, learning you can make that cynicism
versus
erasing cynicism.
Okay.
Yeah.
There you go.
Learning you can make a difference.
In my early career, I was once told by a very like big time script consultant, like one of the bigger ones, that's I matter is generally behind most themes. I matter.
There you
go. Take up space.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I am.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How about that? Well, that fits.
That seems fine to me.
Yeah.
That script consultant was scriptbutcher.com.
Yeah, no, right.
Go there now for your discounted.
So that's me, by the way.
Yeah.
I did not. Jamie doesn't need my notes ever.
I'd say the name, but I'm not sure if it's right.
So we all agree there's a theme. It might just be a little.
It's not.
It might
clear.
Be personal.
It's what you take out of it is a very
which
kind of
goes
idea.
With Schofield and his blankness a little
being
bit.
Being blank character,
take it away, but
being
I think
coda.
Saying there's nothing there is wrong.
I agree with you, Bob.
There's
and
something there.
I disagreed
there.
With that article, and I was surprised because it's from somebody whose opinion. I didn't mean to bash him, but. It's what sparked me wanting to have
we're all
this debate.
Wrong sometimes.
Yeah. It's what it's yeah, I'm
we're talking about art. It doesn't there is no right.
It's what it's it, matter, I wanted to mention it because I want people to read it, and it's what sparked me to have this discussion here.
Right.
Yeah. Sure. So
I guess because I teared up at the end of the movie and I was like, well, I don't think it was hollow.
I mean, you watched him go through
right.
so
I'm
much.
Just saying that has to mean something, and everything doesn't need to have the cheeseburger
Tidy.
The cheeseburger theme that we always you know what I mean mm-hmm. like it doesn't always have to be wrapped up in a bow.
I agree,
you know,
sometimes the interpretation
does that guy hate
is
all...
more interesting.
What about
no
what about...
he's a fantastic writer, let me be clear.
Yeah, no,
his book
I'm not...
is fucking fantastic.
Yeah
yes,
but like this movie is what is the like a David Lynch movie, there's a name for him.
Oh, Antiplot.
Yeah, I was gonna say
Antipod,
like, like,
this
does he
is
not
arc
like
plot to the max.
Does that writer, the fantastic writer that we're clarifying, does he not like? Does he like only arc plot movies?
I don't know. The book is his book is all about arc plot.
Because antiplot movies, the theme can be, you know what I mean? Like the theme can be completely.
He
lost.
Knows his shit.
Mini plot almost the themes. So a lot of writers stay away from theme and mini plot because they want it to feel like real life and they don't want the hand of the writer to show up at any time. Yeah. So they're very cautious about being too overt about the theme.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well,
man,
I still feel like the fact that all of us are at least passionate about saying there's something there.
Yeah, totally.
There is.
Oh, I felt emotion.
But I've,
that's
you know
all
what
matters, really.
But you know what? I have seen posts by people who are like, it left me cold. So there is that.
Interesting.
Not discounting that. It's up to the viewer, right?
Yeah.
It's up to the viewer.
Yeah, whatever your experience was, that's your experience.
Yeah.
A lot of my favorite movies, like, in the 80s, like, I don't even know if this is true, but some of the Spielberg ones and stuff, they didn't have overt theme, like, you know, baked into them. They just had the
like Raiders doesn't feel like a theme movie.
They have like a subconscious. You
know? Indy doesn't
stuff.
Even arc that much.
Yeah.
It's like
the writers are putting personal.
We're gonna do that someday.
The writers are putting.
I mean,
personal
if he didn't do anything, they
things.
Wouldn't even.
Yeah. That's a note.
I'm sorry, Jamie.
It's time to end this.
We need to do it just so we can talk about that. Yeah, I really exactly. want to talk about that. Yeah, I think so. What did we all learn from 1917?
For me, I learned that it confirmed that gimmicks need to have intention and they need to inform all the decisions in the story. And this one does.
Yeah.
What most impressed me, this isn't necessarily a lesson learned, but most impressed me was how they can keep the pace in a movie like this and how hard that would be to write. Because I know when I write things, I'm constantly overwriting. I need it to be edited. I need an editor to come in and chop it up and tighten it up. In this movie, they didn't have that extra, pass. So it's kind of amazing that they were able to pull it off. That was what really impressed me about it, is that they could pull it off without that extra
chop. I agree.
Yeah, and I'm going to go with just how well the, I guess I'm going to say false protagonist thing can work if you do it right.
Mm-hmm.
Because that struck me as hard as it could. Because I was like, oh, he's not in this movie. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was really, and I was moved by the fact that he was the motivation. Like, I was not expecting that.
Yeah.
And that was really impressive.
That Blake was the motivation? Yeah.
That was more impressive to me than, like, the actual gimmick in a weird way. I was like, man, that's what hit me about this movie.
Yeah.
So, yeah. All right. 1917.
Thanks for listening, guys. Yeah,
thanks.
Well, by the time you're hearing this, it'll either have won Best Picture and definitely Best Cinematography. So
maybe it'll win Best Screenplay.
Or Best Director.
Or Best Editing.
We can't know, but Best Editing, yeah. Best Sound Mixing. Sure, fine. I bet you know what? I bet you'll win Best Score. That's my guess. Yeah.
I have the score.
It is. All right, guys. Bye.
Thank you.
You've just listened to Writer's Blockbusters, a screenwriting podcast featuring two professionals and another guy. Available only on Thundergrunt.